Well, hi, everybody. I'm Beattie Cohn-Fredos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. And today's show is dedicated to my parents, the late Maurice and Edith Sayre of Winnipeg, Canada. And I am so grateful to my parents. They gave me the love, the patience, and more importantly, the tools to be able to navigate life's ups and downs. And trust me, whether or not we are therapists or rich or famous, we all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And having the tools and having, even more importantly, or almost just as important, the will to never give up, regardless of the kinds of obstacles and challenges that we all face. So, Mom and Dad, I really wish you were alive today to hear the Ask Beattie Show. Of course, I've been hosting the show now since 2013. And, you know, there's some irony because my mom was a teacher and my dad was my tennis coach and my emotional coach, both off and on the court. And as a student, I was the kind of a student that was really not interested in school, certainly not interested in academics, much to my mom's chagrin. So I had to go to summer school every single summer, and it was a challenge. And yet when I found my passion, which of course has been helping people now for over 35 years, I remember my first national television appearance, and this was after my first book came out. My mom, she called me and she said, "Beattie, I can hardly believe this. Is that really true? Is it really happening that with all the academic struggles that you had, that you've been able to really move forward in a very positive way in your life?" But again, with love, with patience, with determination. And, you know, my mantra has always been to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can the issues that really get in the way of our life and our relationships. And this is exactly, these are the lessons that I try to teach my patients every single hour of every single day. And of course, for those of you who've been listening to the Ask Beattie Show now for so many years, you know that I'm a psychotherapist. I'm also a sex therapist and the author of the groundbreaking book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And I actually wrote this book for my daughter, Jordana. And I wanted her to have an easier time than her mom and most people, you know, when it came to really navigating love and relationships. So I did research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut areas, and I devised a formula, an evidence-based formula that actually teaches all of us how to assess. Yes, assess. It's not sexy, but how to assess who is right for you and who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And I have been trying to promote this formula and to really get people to think about what we actually can do to never make a mistake in love again. And I have to tell you, there's been a lot of resistance. In fact, when the publisher and my agent, when the book was completed, I mean, it was really thought that this was going to be a really big New York Times best-selling book. And the book has done, you know, okay, but I think that we need to be committed to doing some work, and that nothing ever happens in our lives magically, you know, without being committed to the work. And what I've actually discovered over the past many, many years, it's over 35 years now that I've been practicing as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist. If we're talking about love, and again, I know this is not fun and it's not maybe sexy enough for you to hear, But there are really three things that we all need to do to never make a mistake in love again. And the first thing is that each of us needs to be in a really good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. And as I used to tell Jordana, my daughter, is that the relationship really needs to be the icing on the cake. And we need to be the cake. We need to be solid. We need to have been willing to work through as best as we can what I call our skeletons in the closet and unfinished business, mostly which begins with our own family of origin, understanding, of course, that we cannot change history. And that dreaming and hoping and wishing and blaming and hoping that somebody else is going to save us, that really, really, unfortunately, doesn't work. The second thing that as students of relationship, and I hope that we are all becoming students of relationships, we need to have clarity about the ingredients that actually go into a healthy relationship. And people will often talk about things like communication and problem solving, but when it comes right down to it, we're really not clear about what this all means. And then, of course, number three is the 10-step formula. And then think about this formula that I believe upset a lot of people was that my research found is that it takes about a year, not a week, not a month, not a couple of months, to really be able to find out who somebody is and who somebody is not. And unfortunately, we cannot fast forward that process. In fact, before I did the book, because in my own personal life, I'm probably one of the most impatient people that you will ever want to meet. I want it now. I want it yesterday. Professionally, of course, I'm extremely patient. So before I did the book, I might meet someone and I'd say, gee, I met this really nice woman, or I met this kind man. I would never, ever, ever make those kinds of statements today. The best that I could make today would be to say, I met somebody who appears to be loving and kind and wonderful and trustworthy. And again, I now know, and I hope that I have convinced you and thousands of people around the world that it really does take about a year. Now, obviously, if you are seeing a lot of red flags, abusive behaviors of various different kinds, whether or not we're talking about verbal abuse or physical abuse or emotional abuse or substance abuse or other crazy kinds of toxic behaviors, you're not going to stay in just because of the research pointing to it takes about a year. So again, I've hoped that I have convinced you about the importance really of becoming students, relationship education students. Because my show, it is about, or I'm hoping that you feel that it is really about empowerment. You know, because we talk about all the things that we can do, again, not just think and wish and hope and cry about, but we can do to improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. So on the Ask Beattie Show, we naturally talk a lot about mental health issues. And today we are going to be talking about a really, really interesting breakthrough for depression with a guest who I am just so, so eager to talk with, Dr. Len Lance. So on the show, we talk about mental health issues and sexuality and relationships and how and what to do to maximize our physical and emotional well-being despite the stressors of life that we all face. So my mantra, and I think this is something that my dad, who was my tennis coach, and for those of you who know about me, I was number 10 in Canada as a junior tennis player. So it was always about, you know, acknowledging, you know, some of the issues, whether it was on or off the court. addressing them and resolving as best as we can the things that get in the way of our life and our relationships. And a patient of mine a couple of weeks ago, she texted me this saying, and it's a saying that I love. I wrote it down and I want to share this with you. And this is a reminder, an important reminder to say no to the things, people, and places that steal your joy. So we have some things actually to think about as we are approaching the end of 2021. And it's amazing. I found that this year has gone by so fast. But there are things that I want you to actually think about. Because most people, all of us, we yearn to have loving and healthy and successful relationships with ourselves and with family and friends. And for those of us, okay, and those of you who've looked for romantic love relationships, I think that most people will tell you, they'll tell us in great detail exactly what they want or don't want in a partner. But what I want you to do, and if you want to write down these questions, please find yourself a piece of paper and a pen, because these are questions that I really want you to ponder and then hopefully come up with some really good, viable answers. So here's the first question, okay? Are you satisfied with yourself and the quality of your life and your relationships? Again, remembering that nothing is perfect. Question number two, what do you feel stands in the way of your happiness and personal goals? Okay, what stands in the way? What do you think stands in the way? If you're unsure, this is the third question, if you are unsure, are you willing to actually find out? And question number four, if and when you discover the challenges facing you, we all have challenges, right? Are you willing to do the work to acknowledge, address, and resolve your issues? Understanding, of course, that we cannot change history. And what I've discovered over the years is that the majority of people who are genuinely happy with their lives, they are not rich and famous and beautiful, nor were they people who were immune from life's traumas and tragedies. Because in treating thousands of people over the past 35 years at every age and stage in life and from every socioeconomic background, gender, sexual orientation, I've discovered that there is only one primary difference between those who wake up every morning thankful to be alive and those who are embittered by life and who are caught in a downward spiral of depression. We're going to be talking about depression very shortly, anxiety, substance abuse of various kinds, and other psychiatric problems. So what are the differences? What are the real differences? And it is not the bigger, the better, the more. I've treated some of the wealthiest people in the United States, and I can tell you that the money and the diversions, they're fun and they're great, and they do it for about a day or two. So the embittered group, what do? They tend to complain incessantly about their difficulties and disappointments, blaming everyone from their parents and friends and lovers and spouses for their unhappiness. And the happier group, they've had their share of disappointments and trauma, but made a decision to take whatever steps are necessary to emotionally process what did and did not happen in their lives that may have contributed to their problems. And they are committed to not becoming victims of circumstances. And they're the people who seek professional help when necessary and are committed to tackling their problems head on regardless of what those problems are. Okay, so we have really a commitment and we have a choice that we need to make. Are we going to let our issues and problems and challenges stand in the way of our being able to live happier lives? Or are we willing to do the work? And, you know, only you can really answer the question. And if we're looking at people who live longer and have happier lives, what else do they do? And of course, you hear this from Dr. Gary Null every single day. They eat plant-based diets. They manage stress. And this is interesting by gardening. I manage stress by talking to my husband, Jim, and playing a lot of tennis. Yes, I still compete. They stay physically active and they stay closely connected to their communities. Well, today, as I mentioned, we are going to be talking with an expert in the area of depression. Before I formally introduce Dr. Len Lance, I want to give you some depressing depression statistics. There are approximately 350 million people in the world suffering from depression. Okay, 17 million adults in the United States, and I would suspect in the last couple of years with COVID, that number is probably a lot higher. Americans suffer from depression, which translates into approximately 7.1% of all adults, women 8.7%. And the studies tell us that women experience, or at least we express, depression at roughly 2 times the rate as men do. And this is a statistic, and I'm going to ask Dr. Lance about this because I've questioned this, that half of all Americans seek help for depression. I actually don't think that is probably accurate. That is a number that I found, but because we read certain numbers on the internet does not mean that they are valid or reliable. If we're looking at suicide, okay, this is according to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. Suicide was the second. Now, this statistic really freaked me out. And as a mom, I mean, so upsetting to hear this number. Suicide was the second leading cause of death for kids ages 13 to 19, and the leading cause of death amongst 13-year-olds. So what is going on? And much more importantly, what are we as a country going to do about this? I mean, we need to do a much, much, much better job when it comes to mental health in this country. Other statistics, very concerning statistics. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States for all ages. Nearly 800,000 people die by suicide in the world each year. And every day, 130 Americans die by suicide. Suicide is the second leading cause of death in the world for those ages 15 to 24. Suicide is the fourth leading cause of death for older adults ages 18 to 65. And the highest increase, and this is an interesting statistic. You know, you talk about men needing to express their emotions more openly. The highest increase in suicide is for males ages 15 and older. Suicide rates for females are highest amongst those 45 to 54. Suicide rates for males are highest among those aged 75 plus. The rates among the elderly are highest for those who are divorced or widowed, and the importance of community and connection, whether or not you are divorced or widowed. Females attempt suicide 3 times as often as males, and suicide amongst males is 4 times higher than among females. Male deaths represent 79, and this is a really, really disconcerting statistic as well, as all these numbers are,
Male deaths represent 79% of all U.S. suicides. Gay and lesbian and bisexual kids are three times more likely than straight kids to attempt suicide at some points in their life. African American, Latino, Native American, and Asian American people who are lesbian, gay, or bisexual attempt suicide at especially high rates. 41% of trans adults said that they had attempted suicide in one study. 41%. And here is the last statistic before we're going to talk to Dr. Lance. Lesbian, gay, and bisexual young people who are from families that reject or do not accept them are over eight times more likely to attempt suicide. So there are a lot of issues. There are a lot of issues that people need to deal with. And, you know, one of the things, again, that I have hoped that I've really convinced you over all these years is that we do not need to navigate life's challenges on our own. Well, a few weeks ago, I was actually on the internet and I read a really, really interesting article that was written by Dr. Lance. The heading for the article was Stanford's SAINT study, and Dr. Lance will explain what that is, a TMS breakthrough for depression. And TMS is transcranial magnetic stimulation. And I said to myself, I really, really need to talk to Dr. Lance and find out more about this treatment. Apparently, this is a treatment that is used when people who've really not responded to other treatments for depression. So with the internet being what it is, I was able to email Dr. Lance, and I want to introduce him. He received his undergraduate degree in cell biology and genetics from Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire. And after earning his medical doctorate from the University of South Dakota in Vermilion, Dr. Lance completed his psychiatric residency and fellowship in child and adolescent psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin Hospital and clinics in Madison. In 2005, Dr. Lance moved to Montana to provide care to patients in southwestern parts of the state for an organization, capital A, capital W, capital A, capital R, capital E, AWARE, where he also served as medical director from 2008 to 2015. So since 2015, Dr. Lance has helped patients in Helena through his private practice, Big Sky Psychiatry. I love the name. And together with his wife, psychiatrist Dr. Krister David, he has brought transcranial magnetic stimulation, that is TMS, to Helena. And since January 2018, this has transformed the lives of many people with severe treatment-resistant depression. He is a leader in psychiatry in Montana, is a clinical assistant professor in psychiatry at the University of Washington School of Medicine. He's a distinguished fellow both in the American Psychiatric Association and the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. So Dr. Lance founded the annual Montana Conference on Suicide Prevention, which he hosted for its first 5 years. And for 3 years, Dr. Lance chaired the Montana Suicide Mortality Review Team. And he founded and hosts the annual Montana Psychiatry Conference. And this morning, he emailed me and told me that he wanted me to let you all know that he has a book coming out in the spring, 7 Million Christians with Depression. Of course, it's not just Christians. So, Dr. Lance, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hi, Beattie. Thanks so much for having me on today. It's such a pleasure to join you.
Well, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. And I have to tell you, when I let all my patients and I put, you know, your appearance on Facebook and on other social media places that you were coming on, and people were really, really interested and really excited to hear what you had to say. So first of all, let's begin at the beginning and let everybody know exactly what transcranial magnetic stimulation
population, TMS, what it is and what is entailed for people who are opting to have this kind of a treatment when all the other treatments have not been successful.
So one of the challenges in depression are the changes that are occurring in the brain. And one of the changes that's occurring in the brain is that the left frontal lobe of the brain is underactive. And so when these changes are taking place and you've tried so many different things to get your depression better, you've tried psychotherapy or you've tried antidepressant medications, if those haven't worked, TMS therapy has been found to be helpful. And what it does, in a nutshell, is it's stimulating this left frontal lobe of the brain, which is underactive, and making it more active. So TMS therapy involves delivering thousands of high-intensity magnetic pulses to the left frontal lobe of the brain over the course of minutes. And this daily treatment over the course of weeks can alleviate depression when these traditional treatments have failed. So at my office, we provide 36 treatments over the course of 9 weeks. That involves a person coming in on a daily basis, Monday through Friday, for 6 weeks, and then we taper the treatment over the final 3 weeks. But this daily treatment in our office, which lasts around 20 minutes, there's some newer protocols that are even shorter, 3 minutes or 6 minutes. In this 20-minute window of treatment, people receive nearly 2,000 of these high-intensity magnetic pulses to their left frontal lobe. And what these high-intensity magnetic pulses do, they actually cause the neurons to depolarize or to fire. And so it's making this underactive area of the brain that's contributing to depression, it's making that area more active. Because when we think about depression, so many people will say, you know, I'm cautious about telling my friends or family that I have depression because, you know, I have a good life. You know, I have so many good things going on around me, and yet I feel depressed. You know, maybe they would be upset with me or they wouldn't understand why I'm depressed. But, you know, over the last 10 years, we've found more and more in neuroscience research that's showing dramatic changes in the brain that are occurring when a person is depressed.
I have a question. Is it possible, let's say a patient comes to see you or somebody comes to see me, is there a way, perhaps as a first step, to be able to look at that left frontal lobe and see whether or not, and I'm not exactly sure what the correct way to describe it would be, but that something was off, and that perhaps instead of spending years and years with a variety of different medications and psychotherapies to begin dealing with that left frontal lobe issue or not?
Well, I think it's a great question, and there are some psychiatrists who mainly do neuroimaging that would argue that if someone is coming in for depression, probably the first thing that should be started with is a brain scan. I think the challenge is that in terms of wide scale applicability, you know, things that everyone would have accessible, it's not, you know, the science isn't there yet. And I think the other kind of challenge to this piece is that psychotherapy is very effective for many people, and also antidepressants are very effective for many people. And so there's this aspect of the technology not yet being there, but also that there are treatments that are already out there that work. And so some of the times when we're thinking about TMS therapy, you know, why we might not choose that at the very beginning, although some people do, is that there are potentially, like, you know, less expensive or less cumbersome treatments already in existence.
Is it painful? Because you talk about 2,000, I'm writing here as you're speaking, 2,000 high intensity pulses. So, I mean, yeah. Is it painful? What do you feel? Are you lying down or you're sitting up? What position are you in? Well, this is all going on during this 20-minute period.
Right. So I might not be the best salesman to kind of with the language I'm using, but what happens is during a 20-minute session, someone's sitting in a chair. There are some other, there's like 10 different machines that are out there. And so some might have a person recline. The one that the machine that I have has an helmet. Like if you think about like the old hair salon hair dryers, it kind of looks like that, that's sitting perched on top of someone's head. And so during the pulsing, the way the treatment is, and what we do is we have people wear earplugs during treatment because it's kind of loud. It kind of sounds like a loud ratcheting or notching sound. And that's just the sound of the kind of the magnetic pulses. Even if someone like had to go in for an MRI scan for some condition going on in their body, in many cases they're wearing earplugs because of the loud noise of the machine. So people wear these earplugs, and during the treatment, what happens is these 2,000 pulses are spaced out. So it almost sounds like a little ratcheting wrench that kind of sounds like brrr for about 2 seconds, and then it will rest for 20 seconds, and then it will repeat that process again. So it goes through that cycle 55 times. And so during this 2 seconds of noise, you're getting these 36 pulses. So yes, it is stimulating the brain, but that magnetic pulsing also stimulates the surface nerves, like on the face. And so even when it's pulsing, someone's eyes might be squinting a little bit, or they might be moving their jaw a little bit. And that's all kind of involuntary stimulation of the neurons. So during treatment, people can feel almost like a tapping or a rapping sensation on their scalp. And so in terms of side effects, there are no systemic side effects, which is nice. There's no sexual side effects. There's no lasting side effects per se that occur after treatment. But sometimes people notice a mild headache. And sometimes people feel like the sight discomfort from the area where they're kind of feeling that knocking or that rapping. But what's interesting is that people get used to it. And it's not just like they put up with it. I mean, the discomfort that people will sometimes feel or often feel in that first week diminishes over the course of the first week, such that by week two, most people are just ready to roll. In fact, I've treated over 100 patients at my clinic over the last, 3.5 years, and we've never had to stop treatment or just give it up, okay, we're just not going to do this anymore. We never had to give it up because someone had too much discomfort. And we've treated people with severe recurrent migraines, trigeminal neuralgia. We've never triggered something negative neurologically for someone with treatment. So it is uncomfortable. This is not like a spa treatment. You might want to think about it even more like going to the gym. There's some discomfort, at least at the beginning.
I mean, could you take or would you prescribe a Valium to relax the person during this? Because it sounds, you're right, it sounds as if it is definitely not a spa treatment. How are people really able to relax while all of this is going on?
So I would say that people have the most anxiety day one, and it's just because they don't know what to expect. They've never done this before, and I've actually sat in the chair and worn the helmet and experienced the treatment. So I wouldn't say that it's so discomfort or scary that you would need Valium. I can tell you, though, that there are certain things that can enhance the outcomes, and one of the things that can enhance the outcomes of treatment is cognitive reframing. So if we can kind of help people be in a better mental space during treatment, help them with their anxiety, but also help them with some of the negative thoughts that just show up with depression, like, oh, this is a waste of time. Oh, this will never get better. And if they can replace that thought with, you know what, trying a treatment that has excellent odds of helping my depression is a great expenditure of my time, or doing a treatment that other people tell me I'm worth it to get this done. Like if we can kind of get them in a positive mental state, number one is it decreases their anxiety, but the other is you actually see improved outcomes for people getting to full remission of depression.
That's amazing when you say, full remission. In fact, a colleague of mine from Texas, I did my graduate and postgraduate work at McGill University in Montreal. I'm Canadian, as everybody knows. So a colleague of mine who I hadn't spoken to in years and years, because I had posted your appearance, she sent me an email. And she said that a colleague of hers had serious, serious migraines as a result of the treatment. And you're saying that that is something that is really not all that common. I mean, migraines that didn't go away as a result of having the 36 sessions.
We have not seen it in our office. However, one of the other things that can really enhance outcomes for people is having a positive technician who's doing the treatments. I'm there for some of the treatments and setting up treatment, but I'm not there for delivering treatment each day. But having a positive TMS technician can make all the difference in the world. And also, we're clear with people that we can make adjustments in the treatment, like just moving the helmet a half a centimeter, one direction or another, can really alleviate discomfort, because sometimes the location of that magnetic coil and all the stimulation, sometimes it's just really zinging a surface nerve. And by making a small adjustment or decreasing the intensity of the pulses, even though you still get the benefit for depression, it can really enhance tolerability. And so we have not had a problem with people tolerating the treatment. And so I guess what I would say is that of the 100 people that we've treated, some of whom have had severe recurrent migraines in their past or other painful neurological conditions, we didn't trigger any like negative or lasting discomfort.
So I guess maybe you and your staff, you operate a kinder, gentler type of a practice where people are not being rushed about. And I mean, here in New York, of course, everything is so crazy and fast. And, you know, it's always like this, you know, finding whether or not it's your partner or finding a doctor, you know, who has the patience and really somebody, you know, who you can really, really trust. So you say it's 36 treatments. That is the standard protocol?
Yes, there are some protocols where people do 30 treatments rather than 36. A lot of it might be dependent on what a person's insurance company will pay for, because these different machines that are out there that provide the same treatment of TMS all had to go through a unique approval process through the FDA. So the first of the TMS machines was approved by the FDA in 2008. So this is a legitimate FDA-approved treatment. But the device that I have, which is called a BrainsWay machine, that was approved by the FDA for 44 treatments. And what's interesting, I think, is that the only reason to limit the treatments is cost. You know, and I think that's what's happening with the insurance companies is limiting costs, because the research is becoming increasingly clear that the more treatments you receive over a longer period of time are more likely to get you to full freedom or full remission of depression.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's really, I mean, that is amazing. Now, how quickly, and I guess this is such an individual case-by-case kind of an answer, but how quickly do the majority of your patients, you've done 100 of these procedures with 100 patients, do you start to feel some relief from the depression that you've lived with that has not been alleviated really to any great degree, you know, over, I have a couple of patients right now. I'm thinking of just telling them to go to you and just get on, you know, really with the, you know, with the treatment. So how soon do people start to feel a little bit better?
So I'm going to qualify my answer. I'm going to separate out my answer a little bit, Beattie, because the people, this treatment also works for bipolar depression. However,
it does.
This treatment is not.
Wow.
It does. Oh, absolutely. However, it's not yet FDA approved for bipolar depression. It's right now being studied as a breakthrough treatment by the FDA, but hasn't been approved. But what I can tell you is the individuals that I've treated who have bipolar depression tend to respond quicker. We'll just say maybe within the first week or two, they're seeing improvement, but that would be understandable because really the TMS therapy acts like an antidepressant. It has antidepressant effects. So you would expect anyone who has bipolar disorder who goes on an antidepressant, number one, it's a little dangerous, right? Because you don't want to have so much antidepressant effect that you destabilize mood or cause mania. That is a risk.
Right.
But we see people who have bipolar depression can respond really quickly to something that has antidepressant effects. The problem is not over-treating. And so, you know, insurance companies aren't paying yet for treatment of bipolar depression, although I've had a couple say yes, and we've been very cautious to help these individuals. But for people with regular major depression, or what's sometimes referred to as unipolar depression,
right.
For major depression, we start to observe on the beginning of week three. Sometimes people, and I'm talking the treatment, the course that we do at our office lasts, we do a full course that lasts around 9 weeks. So
uh-huh.
At about week three, we're looking for that improvement. But some people respond near the very end. Treatment number 33, 34, 35,
wow.
36. And what's interesting is I'll see them 2 weeks later and they're still improving. So that's an interesting thing. And
very.
The other thing that I find so fascinating in treating people with depression is if you're the depressed person, oftentimes the people around you will see your improvement around 2 weeks before you do. I don't know why that is. I'm sure there's some like neurobiological explanation for that. But oftentimes the person just needs to trust, finish the treatment. If others are seeing that you're getting better, just take it as a good sign until you see it yourself.
Uh-huh. So let me ask you this. Why are we not hearing more about this?
I wish I knew, because I wish I was also full, you know, because what I do is I've reached out. I'll give you an example, Abby. So I reached out to 500 therapists and doctors in my community, and I get, on a regular basis, I'll send them postcards, and I will offer to tell them about this treatment, and I'll send them letters, and I'll call them, and we don't get very many referrals. I think in America, there can be a very slow adoption of new treatments. Now, maybe some things really take off, like people have heard of ketamine, right, for
right.
depression, and that can be helpful, and it can be life-saving, but maybe it just hasn't gotten as much attention as ketamine. So maybe that's one aspect of it, but I, honest to goodness, wish I knew why people haven't heard more about this. I want to say
one of the things that I really want to do. I mean, I'm in national radio and television, and I'm an advice columnist for, you know, a major newspaper in the Hamptons. I mean, we really do need Dr. Lance to get this message out. I mean, I had heard about it, but until I read your article, I didn't really delve into it. And then I found other articles. I'm looking at an article in front of me from the, you know, from the Mayo Clinic, because I have right now, I have three patients who have suffered from long-term severe clinical depression, where there's been suicidal ideation and actual suicide attempts, and where nothing has worked. And I mean, we've done and we're continuing to do a lot of talk therapy, dealing with, you know, all kinds of trauma. There has been more medication changes over the years that these people have gone through, and that I would say that their levels of depression have really, you know, pretty much been unchanged, you know, if one is going to be really honest and realistic about the whole thing.
And I just think that, you know, even the national media, I mean, I have a lot of connections. I mean, we really have to get you and other people who are involved and who are using this treatment to let people know. Because, I mean, look at the depression, you know, statistics that I was citing. And, you know, so many people are just kind of going round and round, and the desperation is getting greater and greater. And in reading your article, I mean, it's really effective, right?
It's absolutely effective. And I think it is also one of these treatments that appears to be even more effective when the antidepressants aren't working. You know, in the U.S., they did this massive study called the STAR-D trial that was this look at how depression gets treated with antidepressants on a very large scale. And what they found is that if the first medicine doesn't work, and then you have to move to the second medicine, and if that doesn't work, and you move into the third and the fourth, by the time you get to the fourth antidepressant medication, that has around an 8 to 12% chance right. of getting you to full remission of depression.
Right.
With TMS therapy in our office, we don't game the numbers at all. These are based on patients rating their own symptoms on standardized depression rating scales. In our office, we're getting fully 50% of people to full remission of depression, and an additional 25% we're getting to response. And what response means is that we've cut your depressive symptoms in half.
Yeah.
I mean, if you could even just cut someone's depressive symptoms in half,
right,
they can function. And
exactly.
So when you're finding something that is that powerful, it would be great to get the news out. And by the way, thank you for having me on here so we could at least share this with people.
No, I'm going to post this all over. I'm going to use my media connections. I mean, this message really has got to get out to the, you know, American world. And, you know, I'm so curious as the Canadian here, you know, whether or not TMS is being used more routinely in Canada, in Israel, and in other parts of the world. I mean, I have a million questions, but let me ask you this. Now, after the treatments, are most people then able to either decrease or go off completely their millions of antidepressant medication trials that they've probably been trying for years and years?
It's a good question. I think a lot of that depends on how involved the psychiatrist is in the TMS treatment. So, for example, when I meet with people who do TMS in my office, I take over the medication management, not because I'm a controlling person, but so that I know what's going on with their medication. And if they want to remove medications, sometimes referred to as deprescribing, if they want to start to get rid of medicines during treatment, if that's a big goal of theirs, I'll do it. We'll be strategic in how we do that. But I would say maybe around 20% of the patients that I treat end up on no psychiatric medications. And part of that is that I work with people that are highly motivated to get off medications for one reason or another. But also, if you are, and sometimes I strongly counsel people to remain on medications. It really depends on their certain situation. But sometimes you have to ask yourself, okay, I'm taking all of these medications, and yet I feel so horrible. What are they doing?
Right.
And so, and there's another little wrinkle in here, which is that because TMS therapy acts as an antidepressant, sometimes I am forced to remove someone from all their psychiatric medicines. And what I mean by that is sometimes during treatment, a small percentage of people say, I'm feeling pretty angry and I can't sleep. And I'll say, I know what we need to do. let's start pulling you off your antidepressant. Essentially, at that point, they're over-medicated, and their body is telling them, time to get rid of the antidepressants.
Uh-huh. So I can see that you are a very, very hands-on psychiatrist. You're really there, aren't you? It's not like, you know, this is one of the things that has been so upsetting for me in the American mental health world. You know, you have 10-minute med visits. You have psychotherapists who are charging just unbelievable amounts of money for 45-minute psychotherapy sessions. And I mean, all of this, I find the whole thing just appalling. And the consumer, our patients, they don't know. They don't know that they are getting ripped off in many, many, many cases. And I mean, I'm listening to you talk. I'm thinking, gee, I really wish you were on the Upper West Side here in New York City. I do. I know so many. Yeah. I know so many people who are not patients of mine, you know, who complain, you know, just incessantly about not having a doctor who's accessible, not having a doctor who listens, you know, having a doctor who's overprescribing. And as you say, writing, you know, one antidepressant and one anti-anxiety prescription, you know, after another. I mean, you sound great. And I don't just say this because, you know, we're on an international show. I mean, you really do. And, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, how we might be able, and this is something we can talk about, you know, off the air, to maybe collaborate in some way, because this message, I mean, the bottom line, Dr. Lance, is that we really have to get this message out. And I know that many of my patients who I told them about, you know, our interview are listening. And so we're going to have to work out some sort of way to maybe, even though I'm in New York and you're in the other part of the United States, to, you know, to collaborate in some way. And you were saying that the insurance, because, you know, again, mental health costs in this country are just crazy. So the insurance does cover, for the most part, almost 100% of the treatments.
Yes. So the challenge, I think, comes in for folks is just that the amount that they have to pay is going to vary based on kind of what their out-of-pocket maximum is. Because this is involving 36 individual medical treatments, when you just consider the multiplier effect of, you know, 36 times whatever the cost of the treatment is, for the majority of people, this will take them to kind of like their out-of-pocket max for the year. Uh-huh. And so insurance companies will pay for this. Now, one other kind of caveat to getting TMS therapy is that the FDA approved this treatment in 2008 for people with depression, and they weren't specific as to how severe the depression is, with depression after one failed antidepressant trial. However, insurance companies have tried to make people having failed four meds and 2 years of, you know, maybe not 2 years, we'll say like a full course of cognitive behavioral therapy. And so sometimes the insurance companies will put a requirement on people. But insurance companies will pay for this treatment. And for people who have more like high deductible plans, if they're kind of near the new year or when the calendar year ends for their insurance, sometimes people will wait till the beginning of the calendar year, especially if they have other medical treatments that they might need in that year. Because once they hit their out-of-pocket maximum deductible for the year, they can get other any other medical care that they need to receive should be covered for free, essentially.
Interesting. Well, listen, I want to continue this conversation both often and on the air. And I'm looking at the clock, and it's really amazing, you know, how time flies when you're having a really important, substantial kind of a conversation. The best way for people to reach you is how?
Well, you can have them, I'm just trying to think maybe the best way, probably by email. I can't, the challenge I would say is that I can't really answer specific clinical issues by email. And part of it is I don't want to take on the role of someone else's doctor if they had a question.
Right.
You know, that's one. But then the other is that email isn't necessarily the most secure way to communicate. Right. But what I would say is that, you know, I've got a couple of different websites where people can reach me. And I don't block my availability, so to speak, and I've really replied to all the emails I receive. So one of my websites is my author's website, which is just lenlantz.com, and that's lenlantz.com. That's one way to reach me. And then the other is where I've written a lot about TMS and where you saw the article, and that's at psychiatryresource.com. Both ways people can reach me. And then I'll just be clear with people about trying to answer questions without specifically about their medical care. Maybe that would be the best way for people to reach me.
Well, listen, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you as a guest on my show. And I will definitely be in touch, and we can maybe put our heads together and figure out what to do, you know, in a much more global way to get out this information. So, again, I want to thank you so much and have a happy, healthy and loving new year. And we'll talk soon. OK, Dr. Lantz, again, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Beatty. Thank you for everything that you do. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. Okay, take care. Bye. Yeah, well, everybody, I can't believe it. Another hour. Oh, my God. It is come and gone on the Ask Beatty Show. And this is the last Ask Beatty Show for 2021. And hopefully for the next 100 years, there's going to be more weekly Ask Beatty Shows. And again, I want to thank you all so much over the years, your emails and your texts and your calls, you know, have really meant a lot to me. And as I've been saying to you for such a long time, you know, this show is not about me. It is not about celebrity. It is not about me going around saying I host the Ask Beatty Show on the Progressive Radio Network. I hope that every single week that I have something substantial, something that you have this aha moment within yourself where you say, yes, I think this is valuable. Yes, I think that I'm now going to go about acknowledging, addressing, and resolving some of the issues that maybe, you know, I haven't been able to do in the past. So again, I want to thank you all these years, and of course, the producers at the Progressive Radio Network, and of course, Dr. Gary Null, who gave me the opportunity to host the Ask Beatty Show so many years ago. And I leave you with my two weekly messages. And the first message, really, I think the most important message is that we do everything that we can possibly do to find ways to love ourselves, to be good to ourselves, to find ways to get out of our own way so that we are actually able to maximize our potential and our opportunities in our life. And of course, the second message is that we all need to be committed, and we all need to be doing a much, 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 much better job in learning to actually love each other. So again, happy new year, everybody. And I will be with you next Monday and every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So be good to yourself, be good to others, and happy new year again. And we will talk next week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.